And I got out, I come running back to you. I come running back to you. Yeah, I come running back to you.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia's people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. This is Wayne Bennett, and it is September the 14th, 2023. It's the 257th day of the year, episode 113. And it's also our guest birthday, Mr. David Sabre. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks very much. And thank you for the birthday wishes. Yeah.
Now, Dave's a historian, a real estate agent, publisher, among everything. Speaking of birthday parties, what year were you born?
That was 65.
65. Do you remember the birthday party in 69 where you went to the Herald Girls party on Parkway Street?
How did you know that?
And had all the dignitaries, Lynn Warren and Cindy Forney.
And
4 years old she was.
Yeah.
And so your birthday experience started early, didn't it, with other parties. Tell me about Cub Scout Pack 112.
Oh, man, that's really, you know, in some weird way, that launched my career. It was being... Part of what made me become a West Virginia historian was time spent with my godfather, who would take me fishing and take me out to the woods and show me things. And the other was with a guy who was almost my godfather. His name was Jack Mays, and he was our Cub Scout and Weeblo's leader, pack leader. And he taught me to ride trees and climb up trees and watch them, you know, and bend down and that, and, you know, led us up into the woods around Raleigh and up in the hills all around Beckley. And it was those early memories of that. That
now, this was out of Sylvia School area. I mean, did you go to Sylvia School?
Yeah, I went to Sylvia. And uh-huh. Yeah, Jack Mays, who was out of Raleigh.
Okay.
Was our Cub Scout leader. And my father was for a time.
Yeah.
He took on Jack and had a heart attack. And so my dad, Jim Sabre, took over the pack for a while. So, you know, all of that kind of thing instilled in me a love for the outdoors.
In 1976, there was one particular ceremony at Sylvia School, and you had won. Did they give merit badges in Cub Scouts? Or they had some type of badge, I guess. But you'd won badges artistry, at being an athlete, a citizen, a showman. And in one particular get-together that you guys had, you and another Cub Scout showed the proper way to fold a flag.
How do you know this? Were you around?
I have good resources.
Yeah.
And do you still remember how to properly fold a flag?
Amen, I do. Well, that also came from being from my family. So my father was in the military, and his father before him. So you don't grow up in my family without knowing how to fold a flag the correct way. So, but that's, you know, and it's funny, I wasn't a big award winner as a kid in any sense, because I was a class clown. And so, you know, attention getting devices, that was my forte. I was not attempting to excel at anything unless it was making other people laugh.
Now, you actually were born in Wheeling, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you moved to Beckley. Your dad was an engineer?
Yeah, dad was a mining engineer. And he worked, it was from out of Pittsburgh and northern West Virginia, the Monongahela Valley region. And his father was a mining engineer and had moved them to Fairmont, West Virginia. And dad met my mom, who was from Uniontown, PA. She worked for U.S. Steel. And they fell in love, lived in Uniontown for years, and then moved to to Beckley in about, I guess, 1963, moved up on Harper Road. The sheriff at the time was their landlord. What was his name? Oakey Mills?
Oakey Mills.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. So they moved in with Oakey Mills, and then they moved to Lower Raleigh Heights, where I grew up and my sisters. But I was adopted through the Catholic Church. And so they adopted me, and within 2 months of my being born, I was with them in Beckley.
Oh.
So I don't have I have no memory of Wheeling. Now, later I would go to Wheeling Jesuit School, and at that college.
Your siblings? How many are involved?
Three younger sisters. They all came from different. My youngest sister is biologically, was my parents, but my two other sisters were both came from different families that we don't know much about the origins of.
Now, you went to Stratton Junior High.
Mm-hmm.
You were in a gifted program in Stratton.
Again, who did you talk to? Yes. Yeah, I was in the gifted program at Stratton. They thought that I had learning disabilities. But again, it was just my being comedic. Uh-huh. I just had no interest in studies, no interest in anything that had to do with anything other than making girls laugh. So they tested me, and the testers sat my parents down and said, you know, we don't think he has a learning disability. We think that he already knows this stuff and is just bored. So, you know, we suggest you put him in a gifted program and just let him run. And that solved that problem. Finally, I could begin to get away from that boring sort of history that we were kind of learning at that time. And junior high is when you get into that. And it unleashed me to be able to go ahead and start digging into the realities of the world around me, which is what history was. It wasn't that textbooky stuff that black and white photographs. It was the world around us.
When you were in high school, did you get involved in anything in high school? Did you acting?
That was when I became theatrical. That was when I became finally a young man named Dan Klingensmith, who's still a good friend that I talk to often. He and some other guys sort of, you know, said, why don't you go hang out with us and try out for this performance, a play? And without thinking, I didn't do a lot of that at the time. I was just freewheeling it. I said, yeah, let's try this out. And I think it was I can't remember what the play was, but because I was crew on it, not cast. But uh-huh. At about that time, then the teacher realized this guy's full of it. He may play well on stage. So I started acting, and I got some lead performance pieces in Arsenic and Old Lace as Mortimer Brewster, and Simon Stimson in Our Town, the drunken organist at the Congregational Church. And so it just fed right into everything I was doing. So
who was the drama teacher, or who was head of that?
Melinda Wills.
Well, Melinda, she did a great job.
Oh, she did. She did.
Yeah. And so after high school, you went to Wheeling Jesuit?
Yeah. Went to WVU for a semester.
Oh, okay.
Probably wouldn't have performed badly, but I probably would have come out with C's, but I was under the impression that I was failing because I'd gotten into partying and I wasn't paying attention. I was hardly going to classes, but still at WVU, you can come out with a C if you do that. But I ended up going to Wheeling Jesuit that next semester because I thought I need to straighten myself up. If I go to a good Catholic school, certainly I'll straighten my act up. And that was not what happened. And my parents said afterwards, this ride is over. So so I came back to Beckley for a semester and then went back to WVU and then came back to Beckley, then went back to WVU. I was a horrible student. Then I got back into history again. And it was the Piney Creek Gorge that pulled me back into it. And some friends had gone on a hike down from Raleigh from Raleigh Heights, Lower Raleigh Heights, down Piney Creek, and we saw these stone walls. And I thought, well, what in the world are those stone walls about? And I began to research, and I found out that it was Alfred Beckley's mill. And that locked my mind into place finally, and I began to study, and I became, at that point, a public historian. I think we jumped ahead a few years there, but what happened was I finally found my footing. That was what I was interested in. Not just this black and white history of these textbooks, but the solid history of what are those old stone walls, and what is this road, and this waterfall, and what happened here. The complete immersion in the past.
Now, at WVU, you did study like Appalachian history and cultural resource management. I wonder if those are the programs that were cut, or they're trying to cut, or
no? Thank goodness they're not, because they are successful. They are successful programs that the school is known for. So, and it has a good reputation for cranking out students in those programs.
What kind of music did you listen to back then during that?
Well, as a child, I didn't listen to rock music. I didn't listen to those sorts of music. I listened to my parents' record collection. So I was listening to the Brothers Four and Dave Brubeck and old standards, Sing Along with Mitch. I was listening to that sort of music.
One of my favorite shows.
yeah. So and was watching Red Skelton with them and Lawrence Welk. So I was listening to that sort of thing, and classical, a lot of classical. You know, I was taught piano lessons, and my father's parents had a large, wide, extensive collection of classical music. So I listened to a lot of classical music. It wasn't until my last year in high school that I started to get into what we call soft rock, I guess now, ELO. And finally, when I got into college, a buddy said, you know, well, what kind of music do you listen to? And I'm like, well, you know, mostly jazz. And he was like, you ever listen to any Pink Floyd? And I'm like, well, no. And what's that? And he said, well, here's a record. It's called The Dark Side of the Moon. So then after that, I'm still listening to all kinds of music. There's so much music in the world to listen to.
Now, I can remember the first time I saw the name Dave Sabre, and you and I have never met until today.
I would remember this.
And the first time I saw the name, there was a little block that appeared in the newspaper, and it was called the Sesquicentennial Facts that you would write about the history of Beckley. They were celebrating their 150th anniversary. And I didn't know whether you were 20 or 80, years old, but I look forward to those every day.
That's good to know. Yeah.
But was that your first writing assignment?
That was the first writing job. The editor I had already been writing as a creative writer and at WVU. And I had come back here during one of those semesters. This is the time at which my career began, 1987, 88. And a friend of a friend said that they could maybe get me a job at the newspaper. And so I went to talk to the editor, and he gave me a job making $1 a column, $1 a day, for a period through that summer. And so I began generating these little mini stories.
Who was the editor that time? Was it
Bill Bird was the editor. Okay, the Hodels were already out of the business. So it was Bill Bird, and he recognized this ability in me to write professionally. And then at some point during that summer, one of the other editors came to me and he said, we think maybe you have what it takes to be a reporter. Would you like to do so? And I'm like, yeah, I'll try it. So I began writing. My first major piece was a piece on historic homes around the Beckley area. So even though I was writing different kinds of things as a reporter, I couldn't stick with one subject. But the best of what I was writing was about history. And my first breakthrough story was about history, more or less. At this point, the first job as a reporter is always that the lowest. It is usually the bread and butter job, which is police reporting. You know, calling the police, calling the, you know, the magistrate court, going up to the jail and recording at the courthouse who all was in jail that day. And that's how we would report that. And
now, I was getting ready to say, before you got into the history part, I can remember there was when the Beckley Needs a Skate Park and Chuck Shoemaker was the mayor, and some people were so opposed to a skate park because of all the druggies or guys would hang around. And also the saga at Bradley Elementary. I don't know whether you remember that story.
Yeah.
But you were writing about the teachers were having a problem with the principal and the way things were done. And it was a heavy, that was pretty good stuff you were writing.
Well, thank you. You know, and I have no memory of that.
Really?
Yeah, because people are always arguing and people and somebody's always dissatisfied. And it's just through the years, I mean, I do kind of remember it, but, you know, it's so many layers and layers of that kind of chicanery when it comes to the municipal government, school districts, or county government. Those are the things, especially the school districts, that an old professor of mine in political science, West Virginia political science, said, that's the group you really have to watch out for most.
Oh, yeah.
School districts are the one that can really go.
But the history part, when you started writing about that, the column was called Long Ago. You had a column Long Ago. That was kind of like the Shirley Donnelly series they had before years called Yesterday and Today. And Jim Wood had the wood file.
There was Bug Dust. There were so many, oh gosh, just all these years of different people who were journalists who would come to the fore as the local historian for a time. And I was young, but one of the editors, Neil Clark, said, you might be the next Shirley Donnelly. And I was like, wow, that would be great if I was the next Shirley Donnelly.
When I was a kid, I looked forward to the Shirley Donnelly columns. That's the first thing. I read the paper every day, and that's the first thing I would look at. And I would read his column, and I'm just interested in it.
You know, it's funny, now that I sell historic homes, sometimes I'll sell homes that Donnelly would write about. And it's just what an honor to be able, all these years later, for all that knowledge and wonder to come to the fore, and suddenly here I am getting to find the next steward of one of these old homes. I'm sorry I digressed. What was
Have you been to his museum, or is it still?
I wish. I've been to it, but I've not been in it. Yeah, but it still stands, and his home still stands out on Ups and Downs, out on Donnelly Road in Oak Hill off of Pea Ridge.
When you first started writing, I think it was early, like 91. I mean, you even did a presentation at the library. The old mill, Beckley Mill, I mean, that was 91 or so. I mean, that was, you were ahead of your time.
I don't know where you're pulling this information from. I forgot about that. That's true. Yes, one of the disappointments and gratifying things about the Beckley Mill was that in 91, I had established a class at WVU, which investigated the history of the old Beckley Mill. And then the second semester of that course would propose the new uses for it as a county or city park. And it got no interest at all. Now, so it did have interest in some of the old historians. Jim Wood supported the idea. Burke Lilly was behind it. Lois McLean. All of these people were very interested. And the mayor, Emmett Pugh, at the time was very interested. But there wasn't everybody, that the old historians were aging out, and that left me as a 20-some-year-old in this position of trying to push an idea or get leverage behind it. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. for years. And then the city of Beckley had sold off the mill, had basically given away the mill to a feller who had said, told the city, well, you're not paying your back taxes on it. And so I'd like to go ahead and pay those off and acquire the property. And he, and the city allowed him to do so. And then I find out about it and I'm like, you're the city. You don't pay back taxes. This guy, you, what is going on here? And still this dang municipality in Beckley makes me crazy. But so Robert Sayre was able to come to the fore and say, hey, you know, we're going to take the property back for the city, and here's your some money for your expenses and all this. Is so the city acquired it again, and then Tom Sofer was the major proponent of all of this. He was has been able to do wonderful things in this city, and so he was able to work with Mr. Sayre to get the property back, and then. Coincidentally, all of that work that I had done years ago all came back again, and we were able to get the property on the National Register finally, which will provide...
Who was it that owned the property, the individual, that the city got it back from?
You know, I cannot remember that feller's name, but...
I didn't know. I hadn't heard that one before.
The city built him a road down to the mill... And they used a bunch of the old bricks from Beckley to line that road. And so I was fit to be tied about the whole thing because I was like, you know, here we've taken city money. We've gotten rid of this landmark property. And we've used the bricks from downtown to build this man a road to the bottom. And I'm not faulting him, but... You know, I'm saying, how did any of this happen with no supervision? Yeah. And that's a problem that I always struggle with in the city is we're not good at protecting our resources.
Now, you branched out. You became the marketing director for Theater West Virginia, and you started expanding your life and jobs, and you also work for Southern West Virginia Convention Visitors Bureau, and you were editor for the Cole Chronicle. Is that the same one that Art Sandow wrote for? Do you know Art?
yeah, absolutely. It sure was. So yeah. I've always been filling these big shoes. The next guy to step into to follow with a guy like Art. So, yeah.
Art still live on the New River or down?
You know, I have not thought about where he might be for the longest time.
Yeah. He had a place down on New River right above Sandstone, but I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not sure where he lives, if he still lives there or not. But you're expanding. You also became a owner of Word One. What was that?
Yes, that was a public relations firm. You know, after years of editing people's press releases, I became adept at knowing what I, as an editor, was going to toss into the wastebasket and what I was going to put into the file and say, let's use this, let's run this story. So after I left the Register Herald in one of those incarnations, I established a company that does mainly press releases. But we also did, I was writing copy for Chamber of Commerce guides, and I was writing, ghost writing for different leaders in the area who were putting out, you know, civic leaders who needed somebody to make them sound smart. So, which they all were, but, you know, sometimes it takes a little extra.
Well, you did a book, Fayette County, West Virginia. Did you do that book? It was kind of, I guess, a travel guide.
Well, they're actually... at some point during there, Lori Noble, who had an advertising firm, she and I began to work on a Chamber of Commerce guide for Raleigh County. If I believe that's how it started. And we both recognized one another's abilities to promote West Virginia. And so we created a company called West Virginia Group. And or an association called West Virginia Group and began to develop Chamber of Commerce guides to different counties. We did Monroe County, Raleigh County, Fayette County. And I think I've still looked back at our work today, and I was talking to her not long ago, and when we realized, you know, we had really gone too far in advance in some ways of where things would be. I mean, we had a vision that was upward and onward in the early 90s, and unfortunately, things would economically get worse over the years. Now things are reversing. Now, from the work from home revolution here, new people are moving into the area, and our promotions are, things are on track with what we thought would happen 25 years, though, later than we expected.
So you're ahead of your time.
too far. But yeah, but at the same time, you know, that still prepared me to be able to be ready, you know, 25 years later for what was happening. And all of this growth is really now happening here.
Now, you had projects also like the Beyond 50 magazine, I think, and there was Kim Valente was a partner.
Well, Kim Valente had, names I hadn't thought of for some time. Beyond 50 magazine was, I had been made named a publisher of magazines for Thompson Newspapers, who had, which owned the Register Herald at the time, and the Daily Mail and the Fairmont newspaper, and others across the U.S. But I had become a young publisher. So I was publishing Beyond 50 magazine, the West Virginia Retirement Times, which was my baby. I had wanted to create a magazine that was much like a newspaper, a hometown newspaper that would welcome retirees back to West Virginia. So, which was an interesting job to have in your early 30s. That was quite a load to have on my back at that age.
But you also worked with the Beckley newspaper again with a pictorial history of Raleigh County.
Yep. Rob Hammond, the publisher of the Register Herald, and I, and a friend John Cinco, who had approached me about creating co-publishing a guide to the history of Raleigh County. And it was a pictorial history, and that was wonderful, incredibly fun to do. And one of the things I like best about it is having not only included the early history and some of the earliest photographs we can ever find, but chronicling some of the more recent stuff. And that is, like, in one of my favorite pictures is the old JFG coffee can sign downtown. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of neon that existed, signage in Beckley, Andy's Market coming up Sprague Hill. I knew that those things were disappearing. And so is the last chapter in that book, I was able to go through the files of the newspaper and find all these old, well-done signs and great buildings that now don't exist. Yeah. I wish I'd gotten Dots Paquette when I tried to explain to people that there was a building painted with polka dots. They don't believe it.
When the year 2000, you started the West Virginia Explorer, and I don't want to talk about the story so much because I'd like to get you back sometime and talk about some stories, you know, that you've written and specifically. But it's an online magazine. It deals with arts, crafts, culture, lodging, everything about West Virginia. And it's been going on now for 23 years. You've got quite a following. What's the business side of it? I mean, are you sell ads to keep the thing going? And I mean, is this a tough job?
It is tough, but it's what I've been doing as a publisher. It's just all of these many, many years. It's just that now, rather than publishing an online magazine, a print magazine, I'm publishing online. And, you know, in that case, you know, admittedly, I was ahead of the curve. Because now newspapers and magazines are having to realize that, you know, we're going to have to do this online. Now, I did it. I began publishing it for two reasons. One, it was my first love, doing stories about West Virginia and the mystique of West Virginia. And the other thing was it allowed me to avoid, it was avoidance. It was avoiding all of these constant deadlines, which I was always desperate to. I mean, I was literally, as a magazine publisher for the newspaper business, I would have to run out onto the tarmac at the airport to get separations, prints to send out to Cumberland, Maryland. I mean, because all of this stuff is, you know, it's very time. There's a consequence of not being able to get the newspaper, the separations to the printers who are union. And so, you know, if everything's not ready to go, that clock starts ticking and that money starts bleeding. So it's always a real pressure to get that stuff done. So being able to publish online meant that I didn't have to have these deadlines constantly, and that I and the other writers could publish at our leisure as we needed to and take the time it took to really do the job well.
Now, those types of jobs that you've been involved with, I mean, on the preservation committees and the landmark commissions and things that are positions you've held, are not without controversy. I don't disagreement. And I'll mention a couple. One, when they were deciding to change the name of the Pinecrest Hospital to the Jackie Withrow mm-hmm. Hospital, or you were against that,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people were against it, but. Just kind of like Valley Drive and Robert C. Byrd Drive, everybody still calls it Pinecrest. I mean,
well, and that was part of my that was part of my reasoning. I don't like naming things after people. I do like honoring people and building monuments to people. But and I would have loved to have seen some sort of thing for Jackie Withrow there. But when you change the name of a thing that's a good name, like Pinecrest, it is what it is, and people know it as that. It actually takes money to do that. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes doesn't work in the same way that whole area is still known as Pinecrest mm-hmm. and will be for a long time. And same thing with Valley Drive. And one of the things that rankles me about the whole Valley Drive, Robert C. Byrd situation is that, and I do honor Robert C. Byrd.
Oh, I do too.
But, you know, when somebody's like, well, you're on Valley Drive, where are you at? That could be anywhere from Sophia to Bradley. It's just, it rankles me. It doesn't sit well with me. So yeah, that was one of the controversies.
You've had controversies with downtown Beckley, what should be done and how it should be done. Are you still on that commission?
No. That commission, I left that commission. I wish I had not, because things really fell apart after I left. And I'm not, and I sometimes, and I do blame myself for the situation in downtown Beckley now. You know, this is a National Historic District. This is the heart of the town. There are laws that that I believe should be enforced to continue to feed money into the town. There are best practices that we understand that are nationally known as what you do and what you don't do in a downtown to make it economically sustainable. And we've done none of those things. And as a result, you see a downtown that's decimated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, if I had stuck around and enforced, helped people, I think that we would be looking at a downtown now that would be a pleasant place to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Danny Bickey had spent a lot of money and a lot of time and trying to renovate and do some things what he considered the right way, and he got a good mm-hmm. got a good start on mm-hmm. some things. But one of the things that made me totally sick was when Oak Hill failed to make the Pure Oil Station a Hank Williams Jr. Museum, or Hank Williams Museum.
Yeah, oh, amen. And I still think today, having to work with Oak Hill about how to help in that situation. And I've been working on some projects behind the scenes towards that, because, I mean, what if I know more about Hank Williams now than I ever did before. And I believe that, I mean, the man was gifted in a way that is hard to understand. The songs that he wrote, as simple as they are, I'm So Lonesome, you know, that these songs are breathtaking. And we've lost him. And, you know, what happens is there's a lot of moralistic belief systems of people that go into these things and like, oh, well, he was, you know, he was on drugs and he was nothing but drunk and that old music that's, you know, just, you know. And that's what happened is a lot of people in the Oak Hill area did not think that he was good enough and that he brought that brought the town down. And so there was this.
But if you had that type of idealism, you wouldn't have a Country Hall of Fame, Music Hall of Fame, period, or a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but because a lot of them had little issues, or I mean, nobody's perfect.
This is the thing: is we all have issues.
That's right.
Life is a struggle, and then you're going to die, and so that is a heavy, heavy burden, and that's so. I do not judge. I'm not the person to be judging. One thing I do judge is that this man created music that transcends
and
is transcendent.
I mean, it could have paid great benefits to leave that little Pure Oil Station there and then build a museum around it. And now it's just they're empty. I mean, they don't even use it as a parking lot. It's torn down.
Yeah, it's just an old space. And the family, I can't point fingers. I know the family and they're good people. I just, there are reasons that this whole thing shouldn't have happened. And Oak Hill has just been, you know, we're in a situation in Southern West Virginia, or we had been, in which there are a lot of challenges and there weren't necessarily, and it's the same case with downtown Beckley, is that the people who traditionally were here as the leaders had to leave for greener pastures. And so there are a lot of people who could have been involved in the economic development of Southern West Virginia who were not here. And there were some, there are many, but there's not a lot. There was not a lot of support for any of that sort of thing. I just can't imagine in the case of Oak Hill how different things would be if there was hundreds of thousands of people visiting Oak Hill annually to see the Hank Williams Museum, the Hank Williams Monument, which is something we could still do.
Yeah. Well, one other controversy. Let me bring it.
Sure.
There was sometime along the line, didn't the Bridge Day Commission or something try to sue you or something?
Yeah. And we're all friends now, but those, and actually, and I do mean that. What had happened was that we had created a guide to Bridge Day in 2002. And at the time, most, I don't think people really understood what the internet was and how it worked, but I had a business partner at the time who was just very adept at building websites and making them work well. And we had hundreds of thousands of pages online about West Virginia. And it was a life lesson for me. This is a somewhat difficult to discuss because it sounds disparaging, but he had become a hoarder and a recluse, brilliant though he was. And when the Bridge Day Commission asked us to fix the Bridge Day website to be more like to their standards, he was absolutely against it. And they, as a result, that incited them to pursue us for copyright infringement. But we suddenly we were in federal court. And,
wow.
And so what it taught me was that, you know, it's always best when you can work with people rather than get into fights. And I wasn't the one who was leading the fight there. I was, you know, let's try to make this work for everybody. And I still live in that world. I live in a world of yes rather than no. And so, you know, that's all in the past now. And it's, you know.
Well, you've had other projects that you've worked with. You've had a website on travel in Southern West Virginia. You've worked on the Big Project. You've, of course, Beckley Founders Day back in the day. You're very active with the Raleigh County Historical Society. I saw where you and Tom Sofer, you guys went down to Leicester or somewhere the other day. And even you've even written about gravestone cleaning and you had a guide to ramp dinners in the state. That's a that's a great idea, you know. And I don't know how many you sold, but you've got some great ideas.
Well, you know, this is the thing. We live in a beautiful world, and yeah, it's horrible at times. But even despite those horrors and those tragedies, it's you know, I feel the need to uplift and to underscore what can be done and what the beauty of everything around us. And in the same way that we were talking earlier about preservation, I believe in enhancing and underscoring the best of what we've created as a nation, as a society. And so when it comes to, for instance, buildings in downtown Beckley, the old Pure Oil Station at the Hank Williams site, those are achievements, and we need to preserve those things. In my mind, there are economic benefits to it, but there are also cultural benefits. There are cultural benefits to teaching children who Hank Williams was, not about his suffering, but what music is and what the grief that and language that that we share is. So in the same way with downtown Beckley, things happened there. And it needs to be preserved. There are economic reasons to preserve some of what we've created rather than to destroy it. And something I would also say regarding preservation, often people will consider, and I am a historian, but my belief in such places as downtown Beckley is not necessarily about the history of it. It's about the economy. When you have a fantastical building that no one will ever build again, why destroy the whole building? Why not save at least part of it? And I say this as a real estate agent and preservation consultant. There's an economic reason to bank on what you have rather than taking it down and trying to build something. That's been one of the problems in downtown Beckley is when you take down one of those buildings, it becomes a brownfield. It is no longer historic. It is no longer anything. And to believe that somebody would move off the interstates, which is where business gets done, and rebuild in downtown Beckley, far from the middling masses, that doesn't make to me economic sense. And I think that the statistics prove. And that's why we create historic districts. They're really economic engines. It has less to do with the history, and it has more to do with the federal government's understanding, when this occurred in the 50s and 60s, that when we build these interstates around these towns and these new expressways, the businesses move there. So what are we going to do with these old, funky, dying downtowns? And the answer was the Department of the Interior and the Department of Commerce will work together to create a model for the development of the downtowns, which will provide grants and tax credits and some assurance of architectural integrity. And that has failed in downtown Beckley. It succeeded in Lewisburg. It succeeded on Capitol Street in Charleston. and succeeded. And it's not about the history. It's about the economics. It's a successful model if you enforce it and do that. But it didn't work. We didn't do it in downtown Beckley. We moved away from it. And that's why downtown Beckley is on the state's, the entire downtown is on the Preservation Alliance's most endangered historical resources, the entire town, because the city stopped enforcing it, stopped employing the guidelines. It was taken out of the Main Street program. So none of those benefits are, you know, come down to us. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a matter of the history and that feel good thing. Yeah. But it's also a matter of the economics of,
yeah. Now let's talk about your movie career with Ambrosia. You know, I heard two movies named Ambrosia before. One was a movie on lesbians, and another was on, it was a horror picture. Then you got connected with Shane Pierce and Dave Gravely, I think, and they were going to make a movie called Ambrosia. Mm-hmm. And the house where it primarily was going to take place was on North Canal. And actually, I was in a real estate business for a while, and I thought I sold that thing one time. And,
oh, man.
And the guy bailed out at the very end when they actually had to have money, you know. But I think a doctor owned it at that time. But these guys had a place called, they had Butter Chicken Pictures, mm-hmm. and they were in consultation with the Mountain Craft Builder. And how did you get involved with that? They made a film. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the film. I don't know where it is.
it's in post-production.
Is it?
Yeah, that's when you make a film like that, generally the first things you do is actually film the film. And then the hard part comes, and that's where you take all of this scenery and you lay in the sound and you put in the music, and that takes a long time. So they are still in post-production.
And Danny Boyd was in that film. Yes. Some, and I've seen a lot of his work that he's done, the plays and movies, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and he does a great job. But so you played Stanley Kubitz?
Yeah, Kublitz, yeah. Kublitz. Based on, yeah, these guys, what had happened is Shane Pierce, one of the directors, had worked with me prior doing editing the videography that I was doing with West Virginia Explorer. I would go out in the field and film these things myself, and then I had hired him to edit it into a YouTube video. And he saw my ability in acting, which I had kind of tamped down. I'm expressive. I may be charismatic, but I wasn't doing acting, and I wasn't trying to be in front of the camera. But he saw that I worked there well. And so they secretly, without my knowledge, had written this part for me in this movie that was exclusively designed to be about me. And it was a version of myself. Stanley Kubrick is kind of a version of Stanley Kubrick, who was one of my favorite directors. And I play this often wearing a bow tie. Now I'm wearing a bow tie the whole movie, which I often do in real life. But I play a version of myself. And they had seen me work and written this part exclusively for me. They told me they would only need me for a few hours because they knew me well enough to know that if I had to dedicate time to it more than a few hours, that I would welch out of the deal. And they said a few hours, just show up. Well, I had more lines than anyone in the movie. And it was 8 grueling hours, at least a day, for 7 days straight of filming.
Wow.
So, but once I had gotten into at the end of the first day, I was almost in tears and ready to just become sick, because I was like, guys, I'm however old I was at the time, 56, 57, 56. And I said, I can't keep up with this pace. But I showed up the next day. They said that they thought they were going to lose me, but I was like, hell no.
Now, it was a comedy, kind of a slapstick comedy. You were a real estate salesman, I guess, and you agent, and you got stranded in the house because of the weather.
Well, yeah, I'm a filmmaker.
Oh, you're a filmmaker
in this, and I get we all get stranded in this house because we have to deal with each other. So, and it is, it's that golden age of comedy sort of stuff. I like it because there's no sexual, there's nothing sexual. There's no bad language. It's perfect that way. I mean, I could be in a film with the bad language if I had to do it sexual. I'd have a problem with that, but unless it was funny. But the thing is, I don't like crudeness, and I like things that you can watch with your kids and not say, okay, we got to, you know, feel uncomfortable.
Now, I can't wait till it comes out.
I'm looking forward to it. I've seen some clips from it, and I'm like, my gosh, that's funny. Because when you're doing a film like that, you're working so hard. It is the hardest work I have ever done in my life. I mean, even as hard as real estate can get when you're down to the line on something and trying to work out and negotiate, or running, you know, out onto the tarmac at the airport trying to deliver prints out to fly out to a press somewhere. Nothing compares to the hard work it takes when somebody says, here are your lines, we'll see you in half an hour in front of the camera.
Wow.
And you're like, who do you think I am? And because, you know, once your brain it's 50, it doesn't pick up stuff like it used to, but still, when the cameras are on and you know that the money is dribbling away, if you're not getting the scene and pulling everything you've got to it, and that's what happens, because you've got to act then and there and do your best, and you have other people depending on you who are putting in all their energy. So it takes a lot of energy to do this, but I do love it, and you'll be seeing more of that in future.
I know this takes a lot of time too, but have you ever thought about community theater and plays and those kind of things?
No, but I'm gonna but community theater does take up, and I've done theater before, but because I'm having to juggle being a realtor and a preservation consultant and a magazine publisher at the same time, it's being able to devote a few hours a night for a week or whatever it takes, or a month, is I cannot do. But I'll let the cat out of the bag right now. I'm involved in a reality show about the West Virginia Explorer, in which we'll be going out to visit all of these places across West Virginia.
And
It's me and the crew and a cast, and it's comedic. It's reality with comedic undertones. And it's about all of this crazy stuff that has to be done as I juggle these different things. But we get to talk, about every episode. We'll be meeting with geologists and geographers and foresters and people who can talk to us about all of these West Virginia wonders.
Have you ever been married or are married, or do you have family or anything like that?
I think that my life has been one long, it's complicated. I've had many, many wonderful girlfriends, and most of them still talk to me. And but I've been so career oriented that I've never been tackled and completely taken down.
If you had all the unlimited money, and what is one event, not a program, but one event that you would like to produce or be involved with, anything, any kind of a show or a weekend?
Well, it's actually the show that we are working on now with the West Virginia Explorer. What happened was I was approached by a feller who had moved back here to West Virginia from Los Angeles, and he has had been involved in the biz out there, And he ended up meeting his, after a divorce, running in through Facebook to his, you know, old girlfriend from high school. And he came back here and he had called me. He's involved in economic development about working on the Explorer as an economic development initiative. But then quickly he said, you know, have you ever thought about doing television? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, I just got done with this movie. And so Shane and Dave from Ambrosia, who I need, and they need to be finishing the movie up, and they're working on it, but I've pulled them into being the directors and the writers for this show. And so we've cast a series of different actors to come in and help on it. But it's a, so that is going to allow us to, we thought about if we just do a series of documentaries, that's where I'm like, you know, standing in front of the camera saying, well, look at this twig or look at this beech leaf. The beech tree is important because of blank. That would be interesting to some people, but it's more interesting to see me fall out of a tree than it is to talk about a tree. And so it didn't take long for us to figure out that we need to go with the comedy. If we're, so we're going to use this, you know, to attract people to West Virginia, because West Virginia has been discovered. Mm-hmm. The world woke up and realized during COVID and the work from home revolution that, hey, there's this place that's magical with all these really wonderful, friendly people who look you in the eye. And they're in this place called West Virginia.
All right.
And so this is all part of that. It's part of the new West Virginia, which is, you know, based on the old West Virginia. We haven't changed, but suddenly the world woke up and realized that these people are pretty cool.
Well, you know, Dave, I would like to get you back and we'll talk about some stories sometime.
Sure.
When you get a break. And but I've really enjoyed this interview and immensely. And you spent a life's work at exploring and promoting West Virginia. And I want to thank you for coming by.
Well, thank you. It was good to be on.
And anyone else out there that would like to be on our program, you can email me at awbennett50@gmail.com and we'll get you on here. And until then, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And until then, God bless you.